Q.
Q. I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. That's right.
Yeah, I'm right there.
Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger Studio. This is the Q Filmcast, and whether you're listening online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks for tuning in. And if you don't yet know, perhaps you stumbled upon us by chance somehow.
In many ways.
Well, let me tell you what we are. We are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently available on Netflix Instant. We take turns queuing it up. We come here, Jolly Roger Studio. We go around the table. We tell you what we thought every week.
Yep.
So here we are this week. We're queuing up the 1995 Western for Sleepwalkers, Johnny Depp film, Dead Man. So if you've seen it, keep listening to see if you agree or disagree. If not, keep listening to see if it's something you may want to queue up yourself. That's the game. That's the way we play it. And once again, my name is Michael. I am here, as always, along with James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
You know, I'm doing okay. I feel like a bit of a dead man myself today.
Yeah, your voice sounds a tad different, sir. Are you feeling better? You feeling okay?
I'm going to soldier on. I'm slightly under the weather.
You sound good. You sound good.
Yeah, but do I look good?
You look better.
Thank you. They don't know that.
Not particularly.
Honesty. Honesty crashing me down to earth. No, I'm feeling okay. Okay, right. I think we're going to be just fine.
We'll be fine.
Well, we can always edit out a sneeze or two or three or four.
No, never.
Never?
Or maybe not.
Oh, never. Add some in.
Oh, yeah, the pressure's on. Yeah, you just jinxed this one. Right. And there is Matt St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
There he is. Beard and all. Hey. Glorious, glorious. Speaking of a beard, there is a freshly grown one on Max Gumbo Johnson. I think it's official.
It sounds that way.
I just want to point out, in 5 days, he's grown more hair than I have in 5 months on my beard.
I think that's actually very true.
You should try a little Miracle Grow. It does wonders.
Yeah.
It's not just patchy either.
Rub it on your face.
It's right. A good looking beard.
Well, it's not there yet. I'm just going to let it grow.
No, you look like the Gorton's Fisherman guy a little bit.
No, come on.
It's getting there. It's a handsome beard. Anyway, that's you, man. That's okay. Max Gumbo Johnson. Gorton's Fisherman. Max Gumbo Johnson. I think that is a staple now.
You look like Mrs. Paul.
Actually, if I grew a beard, I'd look like Gandalf. I'd go with a full wizard look, the wizard sleeves, the whole thing.
There you go.
Wow.
That would be awesome.
All right, let's get off of this train here. And that, the caboose, Adam Jolly Rogers, last man in. This is it. The greatest producer in the history of the Q Filmcast, as always. Hey.
Hey.
All right.
Hey. Hey.
You going through puberty? What was that?
Hey. When it's time to change. All right, guys. So that's it.
I'm going to be nicer to Adam from now on.
All right.
No. Yeah.
Maybe.
You can get a little saucy over there. I've seen it. All right. So here we are, guys. Dead Man, 1995. This is the episode. And we'll get into that here in a few minutes. If you want to keep up with us, so many ways to do it. You have your Facebook, your Twitter, your iTunes. You can find us on YouTube. We post all of our shows there. Definitely go to our site. TheQFilmcast.net. Net? Right. That's it. Also, check out our app, free Android app. You can get that as well at the Google Play Store. Anywhere you want to find us, we're out there.
Everywhere.
We are. And we do love feedback, so let us know what you think. Let's get into it. This is it. Dead Man, 1995. This film written by Jim Jarmusch, directed by Jim Jarmusch.
Yep.
And we know a little bit about him. I think it's Broken Flowers and what's the other one?
Ghost Dog.
Ghost Dog.
Way of the Samurai.
Coffee and Cigarettes.
Yeah. Oh, he did Paradise
Stranger. Paradise
Stranger than Paradise.
What's the one where the three guys escape prison?
Down by Law.
Down by Law.
Down by Law. That one had been on Netflix, we'd have been watching that.
Guy, a lot of people like his work. He has like a bit of a cult following, I guess you'd say.
He does. Very much.
He's a wunderkind, the American indie wunderkind.
That's right. Yeah, he's from Akron, Ohio.
Same place Devo's from. Something's going on in Akron.
Hey,
something's in the water.
The space program, too.
That's right.
And my wife.
Whoa.
Lisa's from right around
there. Does she know, Devo? Or?
She was in Devo.
Whoa.
She designed the hats.
The Black Keys? She's from Akron?
Yeah. Max, you met her parents. You knew her dad was in Devo. Clearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but yeah, that's where he's from. And who's in this film? You got a whole list. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but here's
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp, Gary Farmer, Crispin Glover, Lance Hendrickson, Michael Wincott, Eugene Bird, John Hurt, Robert Mitchum, Gabriel Byrne, Billy Bob Thornton, and Iggy Pop.
And nobody.
And nobody. Yeah. This thing is a great...
Robert Mitchum's last film.
It was his very last film. Yeah, I'm going to blow one out of my Did You Knows because that was on the list, yeah. This film inspired our top three most wanted film characters. Most wanted, like Old West, you know, wanted, nailed to
it. Oh, I was about to go Phoebe Cates on that one.
Yeah, better clarify. I guess, yeah, fugitives. What do you want to call them?
Fugitives.
Fugitives.
Okay. Fugitives are wanted characters, like wanted posters.
All right. Now we've cleared that up. That doesn't make more sense. Yeah. Fugitives. That's what we're going to say. Ratings, guys. IMDb gave this a 7.8.
That sounds fair.
Yeah.
You down with it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That sounds about right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes critics say 71.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah, I was thinking a little higher than that, but the users stepped it up 88.
That's as usual.
Yep. Yeah. The fresh tomato. Darn right.
Darn tootin'.
All right, so let's get into
better
what you
than
have
Johnny Depp's last Western that he did.
Yeah. Let me talk about that in a minute. I have a little bit of a lead in there. Yeah. Yeah, Johnny Depp's last Western. Hopefully the last Western. All right, here's what you have. We'll get into the synopsis here. Take a quick break, and then we'll come back and tell you where we landed on this one, or at least where the train stopped with each one of us.
There you go.
You like that? Oh, nice. Here's what you have. Dead Man takes on the spiritual journey through the American Southwest, told through the story of William Blake, a somewhat lost man without a family who leaves his home in Cleveland to accept an accounting job in the frontier town of Machine. Upon his arrival, Blake is told by the factory owner Dickinson, played by Robert Mitchum, that the job has already been filled. Dejectedly, he enters a nearby tavern, as we all would, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately spending the night with a former prostitute, as we all would.
Former. Yeah, right.
Yeah. A violent altercation with a woman's lover, played by Gabriel Byrne, also Dickinson's son, leaves Blake a murderer, as well as mortally wounded. He flees into the wilderness where a Native American named Nobody, played by the great Gary Farmer, mistakes Blake for an English poet, William Blake, and determines that he will be Blake's guide into his protracted passage into the spirit world while being trailed by a band of ruthless hired guns, who in turn have no idea where they may be led.
Ooh.
So what do you say, Adam? You dumb white man, you want to cue up the trailer?
Stupid white man.
Oh, sorry. God, I hope people who've seen the film get that. If you hadn't seen the film, I'm really not being mean.
Racist?
Yeah.
Right.
No, but that's a key into the film. Right. Let's stop here. Let's take a break and let's do a bit of Dead Man, 1995, starring Johnny Depp.
They've come all the way out here. All the way out here to hell. You're just as likely to find your own grave.
What name were you given at birth, stupid white man?
William Blake.
And you are a dead man.
How do you do, sir? I'm Bill Blake, your new accountant from Cleveland.
I never really loved you anyway.
Boys, the hunt is on.
Place your tongue. You will learn to speak through it. And your poetry will now be written with blood.
You know, I've had it up to here with this Indian malarkey. I haven't understood a single word you've said since I met you. Not one single word. Tobacco.
Okay, so there you go. There's 1995 Dead Man, written and directed by Jim Jarmusch, starring Johnny Depp and everybody else, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so there you go. Let's get into a little bit of Did You Know? And I think Savage already kicked this one off. Robert Mitchum's final big screen appearance.
Yeah.
Has he been gone that long?
Apparently. Yeah,
apparently.
God, been I didn't gone think a while. He was gone that long.
Not okay. A bad way to go out. I mean, it's not like a title role, but not terrible.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, Hope Flows.
Not like Raul Julia. Remember his last role?
What was it?
The Adam's Family Value?
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter, that's
Street
right.
Fighter.
Whoa, poor guy.
Right?
That might be a good conversation. What is the best movie to go out on or to not go out on, whatever?
Right.
Did you know that the hat that Johnny Depp wears in this movie is a John Bull topper?
I know now.
We didn't even need to know that.
I never even questioned.
Yeah. Never even thought of it.
Well, it was questioned in the movie.
Gary Farmer would reprise his role as Nobody in the later Jim Jarmusch film, Ghost Dog. Did you know that?
He did.
Did he?
There's similarities.
I'm going to have to watch that again.
I haven't seen that film. That makes me want to watch that film if he's in it.
No, there's one cameo of him on it, and he says the same line.
Well, did you know that the names of the two marshals that Blake kills are Lee and Marvin as an homage to Lee Marvin?
I did not pick up on that.
Did you pick up on that?
Nope.
How about Robbie Mueller's black and white cinematography was influenced by the work of photographer Ansel Adams?
Well, I can see that.
It was in black and white?
Well, no, it was almost kind of a metallic finish to it. I could see it.
Yeah, especially when he goes through the forest.
That's what I was going to say, the forest scene with all the white birch trees.
Or whatever. White, paper birch trees. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of those down here. They're all over the upper Midwest.
Yeah.
All right, in the opening titles, after the train ride, did you know
what
that Billy Bob Thornton's last name is incorrectly spelled Thornton instead of Thornton?
Wait, what's his name?
They screwed up his name in the titles. It's spelled T-H-O-R-N-T-O-N, but in the titles it's T-H-O-R-T-O-N. Apparently, he saw it after the fact and didn't make too much of a fuss. He thought it was funny that they misspelled his name in the movie.
Yeah, they spelled his name right on the check.
Right, that's all that matters. All right, so there you go. A little bit of Did You Know. Now, let's get into this thing. Currency.
Oh, there's one more, the Neil Young thing.
Oh, bring it.
It's the best. All right, Neil Young, who did the music.
Yeah.
He watched the movie all the way through and recorded it in one take.
Yeah. Did he?
He did that three times. I think they took the best of the best right there.
And get out of here. He just kind of sat there and just strummed along with it.
With the guitar, he played along while he watched the movie.
Yep.
God, that just ups the credit of this film, doesn't it?
That's the best of the best.
That's the way to do a soundtrack.
Was he wearing a John Bull topper while he did that?
No, Neil Young,
That's fantastic.
He's probably just wearing that big floppy suede hat he wears.
All right.
Currency.
For another time.
Currency, because, you know, we don't use thumbs up, thumbs down. We don't do stars.
Nope.
Because, well, that's stupid. We let the film tell us what we want to do. So let's talk about the Currency. Savage, what are you gonna get us to rate this film?
There's a ton of them to go with this, but I think Twist of Tobacco.
Twists of Tobacco.
Major theme in this movie.
All right, so let's get into ratings. You want to do that right now?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and the way we do this is we go around, usually starting with the guy who queued it up, James Hearts of Savage. Tell me what you gave the film 1995, Dead Man.
Well, I'm a huge
using Twists of Tobacco,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, I have 8 Twists of Tobacco for you, sir.
I'm not just one Twist of Tobacco.
No, I have 8. I like this film a lot. I think it falls short in a couple areas. I'm giving it an 8 Twists of Tobacco.
8 Twists of Tobacco.
Tobacco.
Tobacco, as they say. Well, since you're all lively over there, let's go over to you, Max Gumbo Johnson. I'm doing it. I'm skipping around.
You threw me for a twist. I'm going to go with James. I'm going to give it an 8. 8 Twists of Tobacco.
Oh, feel the love. Feel it.
Feel
8 Twists of 8 Twists of Tobacco. I'm sure we're going to have some things to talk about why we did it there. I usually go to Adam later. Let's go to him now. Let's just do that. Let's say, how many Twists of Tobacco are you going to give the 1995 film Dead Man, Adam?
Just 6.
6?
6.
It's not bad for Adam.
That's high for Adam.
Yeah.
If it's non-Asian, non-horror, that's high for Adam.
And
non-hair of the mod.
I'm not even going to say anything. I'm going to be nice.
Enjoy your reprieve, sir.
Yeah. Don't worry. It might sneak up here.
All right. So, over to Matt St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear. Twist of Tobacco, what are you going with?
I was
going
to go with an 8, and then I got skipped. I got skipped over.
No, I'm just shaking it up.
No, I got skipped.
Haven't you ever heard of best for last? Can't you just go with that premise?
I'm not even last.
You're not last. You'll be last.
Hold on a second.
I'm going with an 8.
I was
going
to make you... okay, stay right there. Oh, you know, 8 Twists of Tobacco.
All right. Yeah.
You know what's funny about this film? I said I watched it before, and... you know, I remember when I was the shaft generator at my old job and I was bored to death?
Yeah.
I used to watch movies.
Yeah.
This is one of them. And I don't think I had the right context to watch this film in. So I really wanted to watch it again. I thought there might be something there. Didn't know if it would take me up, take me down, or keep me the same. I found like I got a lot more out of it this time.
All right.
8 Twists of Tobacco.
Look at that. Whoa.
What we got going
on? Total of 38 Twists of Tobacco. That is a lot of tobacco.
That's a lot of tobacco.
That is a lot of tobacco.
More than was in this film.
Wow. Yeah, no one had any tobacco in this film.
No, that was like a commodity.
Right. Well, it was a commodity.
Well, I mean, but it was like everybody had bullets and whores. Nobody had no tobacco.
Yeah.
And attitudes.
Attitudes, yeah.
All right, hearts up. Talk to me, man. You gave it 8 Twists of Tobacco, Dead Man. Tell us why, man. What do you have to say about this film?
I like Jarmusch. I like what he brings to the table. His style. You know, for me, pretty is almost good enough. The thing is beautiful. It almost makes it good. I know Max disagrees with me on this. Pretty doesn't make a good movie, but for me, sometimes it does. If it's good looking enough.
It can carry a film.
It can carry a film. But then I'm also a sucker for thematic things, and this film is completely allegorical. It's thematic about transformation and life and death and all of those things. Sometimes it's a little heavy-handed, and sometimes it's a little ham-handed with it, and that's why I give it an 8. But it has these overarching, universal, timeless themes, and it's shot beautifully, and there's some genuine humor, and it's well-acted, it's well-shot, it's an 8.
Yeah, definitely higher up the scale because of really the craftsmanship of it.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And, you know, Jarmusch, this is the first time he experimented with, like, a period piece stuff. Yeah. Where he does more contemporary. I don't know if anybody's seen Coffee and Cigarettes, but you know, it shouldn't take 15 years to make that movie.
No, no. I understand what you're saying.
I think he captured this, and you know, he had a lot of talent to work with. I mean, yeah. Obviously everybody wanted to work with, and I think Johnny Depp has said that. It's like, he chooses directors that he wants to work with, not necessarily the script. It's like he wants to work with directors.
Right.
And he chose this at that point of his career. He chose Jarmusch because whatever. I just think thematically it says something and it resonates.
I'm with you, because a film like this, it really works when there's a little something at the core that's big. It's a big theme somewhere in the core. And that way you can coat it with all these sprinkles and lighter things and more artistic. Well, no,
that's what it is. Yeah, it's what it is, because the plot is very basic. It's he shoots somebody and tries to get away. I mean, it's not a very complicated plot.
Yeah, but that's just the gloss of it, really.
Right.
I mean, there's more there.
No, absolutely. It's the theme, and it's how you work the theme. It's how you work the allegory, and you work the philosophical thing that you're trying to say. It can be a little heavy-handed, but I'm sure one of the other guys will point that out.
Well, let's find out. Let's find out. Because you know what? I smell beans, and that means I'm going to go straight over to Max, to the Max Johnson.
Oh, no.
Matt, you ready, or you want to go somewhere
else? What's that got to do with beans?
I don't know. It was in the film. Don't you remember?
Yeah, I remember.
I smell beans. No, actually, I smell gumbo.
Yeah, that would have been a better clue.
Are there beans in gumbo, actually?
No, there's possum in my gumbo, though.
No possum in my gumbo. Ain't no beans in my gumbo. Ain't no okra in my gumbo either.
I'll tell you what is in your gumbo. That's sausage. I've had it. Sausages. Well, let's talk about this film, man. You gave this 8 Twisted Tobacco. Why?
I'm going to go, James. It was gorgeous to look at. It really is a pretty looking movie. In fact, you can make a movie in black and white, but it doesn't necessarily make it look like an old movie. It just looks like a new movie made in black and white.
Like, one looks like video, one looks like film.
There were some scenes in this where it actually, especially that scene where Depp had just gotten shot. Well, he sat on that log and he was about to get shot, and then he got shot and turned around. If you look at that, go back and look at that again, it literally looks like an old movie.
Yeah.
And I think they did that purposely.
Yeah.
I think they did that specifically to make it look that way, to give it that Western feel, I guess, maybe. And they pulled it off brilliantly.
Yeah.
Other than that, the story, it was pretty simple, pretty basic, but it's everything that happened throughout that story that it's like it was loaded with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That I think I got some of it, but I didn't get most of it. I think it was mostly a story about, you know, when they say dead man, whether they mean that literally, was he dead at the beginning of the movie and this was just his long journey into his final death?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know what? I'm not sure I understood everything.
That is kind of the ongoing bread trail in this thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he's slowly dying through the whole movie. It's a protracted 2-hour death.
Yeah.
Especially really what the whole movie is.
Yeah.
The passion of the dip.
But you wonder, you know, well, was he dead from the second we saw him on the train, or was he dead when he got shot? Yeah. And maybe this is just him kind of wandering around.
And those
stuff
are legitimate questions,
But you can't really say it was, because it actually had this reality-based story where these guys are hunting him and they've got the pictures of him and stuff like that. So it throws a lot at you to try and figure out. And I don't think there's going to be some guys say, oh, I figured it. I know what it is.
There are some clues that maybe if one guy takes it one way, one guy takes it another.
I think it's meant to be taken that way. Sure. So you come up with your own conclusion about what the movie's about. I've kind of got mine, but hell, I could be wrong. But if nobody's right, then nobody's wrong either. So,
and that's why there's a little bit here, because it's not just a film that you watch. It does give you some things to kind of ponder, tilt your head at, and kind of wonder about.
It gives you plenty to ponder.
Yeah, and I like that part of the film. And you know, you say you might get something out of a second time. I did. I remember the first time, I'm like, what's the big guy? Yeah, I just kind of fell flat. I was taken back by how much more I did enjoy it the second time because of that. I kind of latched on, like, okay, they're trying to get me to go somewhere. I like that. Okay, so you ate Twisted Tobacco. And we're talking about
Tobacky.
The 1995 film Dead Man, starring Johnny Depp. What do you say about the producer? You want to find out why he slid down the scale a little further than the rest of us?
Sure.
Six Twists of Tobacco. What you got to say?
It's not a bad movie by any means, but I kind of see it this way. It reminds me of a badly made burrito.
I like that. I don't know why.
What? The first bite is doughy, then it gets really good, and then the last bite's all doughy again. I didn't like the beginning. I didn't like the end very much, but the middle of it was really good.
How's the burrito doughy? It's chewy.
I guess where the tortilla folds over at the front.
I really enjoy that.
So he eats Taco Bell.
What about breakfast burritos? Can we go with that?
You can go with that if you want to. But I mean,
full of sausages.
Is this with cheese now? Or? I just need to know what I'm looking at.
Well,
anyway.
See, and
beef,
honestly,
lettuce,
Bomb.
It was everything. It was loaded in the middle.
Yeah. Well, honestly, Bomb, I really thought that you would like the Crispin Glover thing at the beginning.
That really made no sense to me on that.
Really?
Like, I really thought that you would dig the Crispin Glover.
Why was he just covered in black? I know it was from
machine. Shoveling stuff into the fire.
It just seemed out of place with him coming in, them shooting Buffalo from the train. It was like, why would they have to just shoot it? I mean,
well, we're going
to
talk about why. There's a reason.
There's a reason.
Utilize why you shoot them. You know,
it's called allegory.
Yeah, but I know what he's saying. It's like this thing is. There's a lot in the middle of this thing.
Food.
I mean, it's packed full of stuff, man. You got to do a little bit of kind of dissecting of this film. But it's not, you know, it's not like he just, Crispin Glover showed up at the set and he's like, dang, you didn't wash your face today. Get on in here. I mean, there's a reason why he's
It could have been that.
Or maybe it was.
And it's Crispin Glover after all.
You know what, though? That's not a bad way to say how this film could be taken, is that it's just stuffed.
Except for the burrito part.
I love a nice burrito. I'll tell you what, though. It is stuffed full of cameos. I know that.
Yeah.
What do you got to say, Hoodster, Matt St. Hoodie? You gave this 8 twists of tobacco. You want to say why?
First off, in 1995, this was my favorite movie. All right, it's lost a little bit because I've seen more movies since then.
Yeah.
But in 1995, you couldn't get better than Dead Man for me. That was that. So I love Jarmusch, loved him back then even more. So I, you know, wanted to soak it up as much as I could. And I remember reading that he kind of goes for like the in-between scenes, like the little scenes that just you wouldn't think would matter in a movie. That's kind of what he looks for. As far as how he shot it, why he decided to do a Western on this one, I think I read somewhere he wanted to give us like a foreign environment, a foreign landscape that we couldn't really say that we had been to or seen.
Yeah.
And that's why he decided to go black and white, because that would kind
of... He does a lot of his movies in black and white, though.
True that.
Do you agree that...
The earlier films, yeah.
A lot of directors say they like black and white because it doesn't put a time stamp on it. It makes it more timeless. That's why the directors do that. Do you think it works here?
Yeah.
Makes a whole lot
longer?
I would
say so. I mean, he's saying that it was very much so like an old movie. That's saying that it's kind of out of time.
Well, and also, I think in this particular film, it works with a dislocation of things. You know that you're in the generic West.
Yeah.
You know,
and Machine, that's the best town ever. That's just so badass.
What did you think about that, too? When he gets off the train, you enter this world. That really worked for me, and that's where the thing took off. Is that the way you felt about it, too? That's where the end of the line, and then it kind of starts, you know?
I really think it starts after he didn't get the job. Before that, it was just really weird. You know, you see the train, you see it cutting to the landscape, and then to him just kind of sitting around, then to the landscape, and to the train.
The transformation of the passengers on the train as he gets deeper and deeper.
Okay, I don't know about this.
Yeah, and the landscape.
Well, I know that they changed, but yeah. I didn't pick up on anything, any significance to that. What's the significance of that?
Oh, the difference in their clothing, the way they look.
I mean,
have guns, and then they get to the west, out to the southwest.
Yeah,
they've all got guns. And,
right.
Okay, I did pick up on that, but that just puts him more and more out of place.
Exactly. The social outsider, which is
which really comes together like what you're saying when he gets off the train and the guy bumps him over and he's wearing the gaudy plaid suit and he does not belong here.
You say this was your favorite film in 1995. Here we are almost 20 years later. What kind of took a step back? I mean, you say you lost a little bit. What was it?
Man, I really don't know. Honestly, I don't really know what this film is about. I've had so many different ideas. I've seen this 100 times.
Really?
So I've had so many different interpretations of my own, what I've read of other people's, what I've talked about with my Jim Jarmusch fan club.
Of which you are the president, right?
Yeah,
you dirty, dirty Philistine.
I was
You're just
one
a
point.
Dirty Philistine.
Yeah, now I've defined this movie differently so many times that I just don't know what it means anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm really going to have a hard time talking about it because I really just have no idea. It can mean any number of things.
Yeah, you've overthought it almost too much.
Yeah, like in 1996, I could have said I overthought it. Yeah. Now, forget about it.
It's like, for me, it's like I'm fresh off the trail, man. I have some things that hot in my brain.
Yeah.
I want to talk about it. For you, it's like it's all a dim light now. You've seen it so many times.
I don't want to say a dim light, but I think that I've covered this many times, and I just don't even have a clue what my opinion is of this.
You don't feel like you've been subjective to it for a while and then reached a point where you can be objective to it?
No. Like with any good movie that I like, you were busting my chops about the Mystic kind of thing, and I think that that's something that always changes as you change and you kind of put yourself into it and take something else out of it. So.
Yeah. Well, let's stoke the coals, see if we can get them hot for you, see, because I guarantee you're going to have to back us up ways with us on some of this stuff. Let me tell you what I got out of this thing, and then we'll talk about some of these scenes. Thinking back on this thing, what worked for me was the style and the character of it. I mean, just the style of it, like we'll keep talking about it. It just has that thing that's all its own. And the whole thing just rolls along like a big wheels on a locomotive, you know what I mean? Excuse the pun there, but that's what it's like. And that's what I liked best in the end. It just has its distinct, purposeful identity. It's like it knows strongly where it wants to go. It's going to lead you off into something. And it's just a cool, cool film to me. I mean, that's really the word. I thought it was cool. It's rich. It's otherworldly. It's thought-provoking. I liked all that. You know, I liked its heart. Yeah. It's character. And it kind of introduces itself like that, like a big firm handshake. It just comes on in. I'm talking pre-credit. You know, it's like, hey, nice to meet you. Follow me. It's a strong opening and it hooks you, especially with the imagery. You know, he's on the train and there's no narrative for the longest time. Everybody's mocking him through their eyes. Even like the way the lamp is swaying above his head. It's almost mockery of this guy. He sinks deeper and deeper into his seat and you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. He's getting let off into somewhere and you're waiting for somebody to say something to break the ice. And here comes Crispin Glover.
And it's Crispin Glover.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, this is just a cool film already. And he's covered in soot. And then he talks about the train being like, do you remember when you were on that boat? And later on, you find out you think he's talking crazy, but that's how the film ends up.
That's how it ends.
Yeah. And so then you start asking questions after the film, like, wait, the first frame talks about a boat. The last frame is a boat. Let me dissect what happened in the middle here. So the whole thing just kind of came together in a very interesting way. Really good stuff, you know, and from there, the whole thing just goes. You know, you start to meet all these awesome, well-written characters, and it's like they're served up one at a time. You know, Robert Mitchum, John Hurt, Gabriel Byrne, and Michael Wincott. I always liked him, too. You know,
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That guy's fantastic. He was in The Crow.
Doesn't shut up.
No, he doesn't shut up, man. But the whole thing is a parade of just things that I like to look at.
Right.
It was like one after the other. It was like window shopping through a great story, you know? The dialogue's smart. It's ambitious. I think the screenplay is great too. When you consider how well these simple bits of what appear meaningless, yeah, right? They're all strung together and they just kind of work in unison with one another. What I found interesting about this film is like there's 25 different scenes and it's played out like a curtain on a stage, this big fade out black. And then the curtain comes back with a big fade in. And it's almost like, okay, I'm looking at like a different set. And every time the curtain was pulled back again through the big fade in, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Every scene ends with this massive fade out. And it comes back, and here's another great set. I'm looking at something else that's just cool.
Yeah.
I like that about it. I can't say much bad about the film. It deserves its reputation, that's for sure.
Sure.
I actually love the screenplay and the way all these great scenes, as I say, these sets come together. If I had to say a few things, it was probably a little overdone at times. I thought it was a little too long sometimes. A little long-winded. The score, we talked about that. It's a great score, Neil Young. It's
one of the best ever.
Yeah, it felt like it just kind of
it was organic.
Yeah, okay.
It was literally organic.
Yeah, it was literally like organic, I mean,
he literally sat there and watched the movie and played his guitar.
At times it felt a little heavy-handed on that, a little forced.
The music just didn't fit with the show.
I'll give that to you, but that adds to it.
Yeah, I felt like it didn't fit at times. I wanted something a little different, maybe. But that's just nitpicking.
That last track when he's going through the Indian village is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, this is a cool film. We haven't really talked about the scenes yet, so why don't we take a break? Let's listen to something right now, a piece from the 1995 film Dead Man. Check this out, then we'll come back.
Look out the window, and doesn't it remind you of when you were in the boat, and then later that night you were lying, looking up at the ceiling, and the water in your head was not dissimilar from the landscape, and you think to yourself, why is it that the landscape is moving, but the boat is still, and also, where is it that you're from?
Cleveland.
Cleveland's.
Okay, and there you have it. It's a piece from 1995's Dead Man starring Johnny Depp, written and directed by Jim Jarmusch. All right, let's get into some of these scenes, man. Let's just go around and talk about whatever it is that blows your hair back. So much to talk about in this film. Why don't we go over to who wants to go first?
I know James's favorite scene.
James, go.
What is my favorite scene?
Go.
What is my
obviously
favorite
the trainee scene again.
That's your favorite.
And again.
Why don't you talk about that
and
scene,
and again.
Why don't you talk about that
scene?
That
actually was one of my favorite scenes.
Are we talking about the Iggy Pop scene?
Iggy Pop.
This thing
love
is full
Iggy.
Of great cameos, the and that's probably scene. That's the one that rises to the surface, man, the Iggy Pop scene. You want to talk about that?
Sure, why not?
You said your favorite scene. What did you like about it?
I liked it because, just the banter between Iggy, Billy Bob, and Jared Harris.
Yeah.
Just them going back and forth, yelling at each other, threatening to shoot each other, and I thought that was just great.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes, too.
Yeah, it's deadpan comedy is what it is.
Done
that
well.
Made me laugh so hard.
Done really well. Those guys sitting around the campfire. Well, shoot me then. You going to shoot me? I dare you. Oh, hellfire. Burns like hellfire. Shoots them.
That's the best reaction to being shot, I think.
Well, God.
I'm going to have to kill somebody now.
He said. But he says it better than anyone on the
planet. Woo, you shot me. Boy, that burns like hellfire.
Yeah, no, that is a great scene.
Yeah.
It's the comedic relief. I think the movie was kind of weighing itself down because this is a very thematic, it's a very allegorical film that it's trying to load you with these And sometimes it is. I mean, if there's a critique on it, it's very heavy-handed at times. It's like, okay, I get it. It's about death. It's about transformation. It's about the passage through.
Yep.
And these are the things that you see during your passage. You know, do you face demons? Do you face angels? Or what's what? And what do you have to face? And these three trappers were part of the demons that he had to face to go through his passage.
Yeah.
With his spirit guide, nobody who has no body.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little heavy-handed at times. Yeah.
So you picked up on that as well?
Oh, of course.
Because he introduces himself as, I'm nobody.
Yeah, but the way he explains
it. He's a spirit. He's a spirit. Yeah.
But the way he explained it is a little better. But it's still thematic and it's allegorical. And at times, and that's why I gave it an 8, it's like, sometimes it's just like, kind of beat you on the head with it. It's like,
yeah, but in the end, man, that, you know, every one of these things kind of stand on their own, don't they? I mean, we're talking about this as, well, it was a fun, great scene.
Is a fun, great scene. Yeah. And that's why it's a fun, great scene, is because it comes out of this heaviness.
Yeah.
And then there is this lightness.
Yeah.
You know, and then it turns into full on murder, but.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Right.
That is a fun scene. And I understand why it's Adam's favorite scene.
It's hilarious.
It's one of the ones I remember when I think back. It's like, boom, that's it. That's at the forefront.
Yeah.
This particular one.
Yeah. For me, if my favorite scene, and it almost goes to a favorite line.
Yeah.
Is when nobody leaves him.
Yeah.
And he wakes up and he's gone and he's all alone. And then the marshals come up.
Yeah.
And they find his camp.
And Lee and Marvin.
Yeah. Lee and Marvin.
Yeah.
And they ask him, is there, they get the drop on him. He's like, are you William Blake? Are you William Blake? He's like, yes. Do you know my poetry?
Boom. Yeah.
That line right there is like, do you know my poetry?
He kind of accepted what he was at that point. Yeah, that's where he turned the page of, okay, I'm not going back. Well, I'm on the path.
It harks back to something that nobody said earlier.
I mean, nobody, you will learn to speak through this.
And can you talk about nobody? Nobody is the Gary Farmer. He's the Indian. He is the guide. And then we say nobody. That is who we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. I guess that is something that needs to be made clear.
I want to make sure that's clear. Nobody. Didn't they give the guy a name, you know?
Right.
You will learn to speak with this. And that's, it harkens back. But it goes more to the transformation of the machine and the human being speaking through the machine. It's all of these thematic allegorical things.
Right.
And it goes back to this will become your tongue. This will become your language.
You
will become less of a person. You would be more of a machine.
Yeah.
But it's brilliantly delivered and it's brilliantly poignant at the moment of delivery. Right. It's like, are you this guy? Yes. Do you know my poetry?
Yeah.
One of the best shots of that was when one of the bounty hunters was laying down on the pile of sticks. It almost looked like an icon, the halo around him.
No, it specifically looked like an icon, and they commented on that it looked like an icon.
And he said it did, and then he crushed his skull with a boot. And it didn't look like an icon anymore. I want to talk to Max.
Too easily, dude.
Max, talk about this film, man. Talk about some things that stood out for you.
Real quick on that icon scene. Yeah. Before he said he looks like a religious icon, I think because they showed a quick shot of it, I said, that looks like somebody at Stations of the Cross or something. And then he goes back and says, hey, it looks like a blah, blah religious icon.
Yeah.
And he squashes his head like a watermelon.
Yeah. You're talking about the symbolism in this film. I've thought this film was full of it. One piece of symbolism that stood out to me. Did you notice that when he was shot, I'm talking about Johnny Depp, did you see the shooting star automatically shoot across the sky? Mm-hmm. Like his spirit left him.
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't get that.
I didn't know. I'm glad I saw that because right then, I think that changed my perception of the film. What just left him? Is he dead? Was he dead instantly, like right there? And all of a sudden, he entered the spirit world with no body. And nobody's just taking him where he needs to go.
Yeah.
Was any of that actually physical? Was that all just spiritual from that point forward?
I don't know. I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, he got shot here. Is this sort of like a Sixth Sense thing where he's literally dead the whole movie?
Yeah.
And he's just kind of slowly dying, and this is what's going through his brain at the time while he's dying. It's like having this fantasy, like Jesus on the cross.
Kind of like something out of Jacob's Ladder. The whole thing took place in his head.
Something like that, or Last Temptation of Christ, or you know, anything, any of those. It could have been something like that. It's up for interpretation, you know.
I thought about that, but he had too much interaction with too many characters.
But that doesn't matter. Yeah, he still could have been imagining the whole thing.
Yeah, and that, I mean,
he could have been dead from the train ride.
It's his brain trying to process that he's dead.
The train ride is him having already died and coming into this, like, what is
maybe Dante's
that? That brings me a question.
It really is.
Can I ask a question?
Well, that's what I was thinking too.
Big art paintings on
exactly
Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, another Dante's Inferno thing. And I thought about that as well. We look back at Crispin Glover. Remember when he said it was a lot like being on that boat?
Don't forget the first thing Crispin Glover says to him. I think he says, "Oh, you're from out east or something. What'd you come to this hell for?"
That's right.
And he literally says, why did you come to hell?
Yeah.
So, and when he said that, I said, okay.
Also,
I think I get it.
Machine's the end of the line, which is heavy-handed.
And welcome to the machine.
And when he got off the machine, it was like hell. Did you see all that bones laying in the street?
Oh, yeah.
People doing raunchy things in alleyways and threatening you with a gun and the endless debauchery that he had to go through. And you can almost smell the sulfur. It was like hell. Yeah,
that goes back to the way that he shot the movie, be trying to make it otherworldly, like something you couldn't, you know, look out your back door and recognize.
Like the birch tree scene, when they're walking through everything, it almost looks like the trees had eyes on them, staring at him and stuff like that.
I missed that.
Man, there was some great scenes.
It had that, when he first got into Machine, and had that totally cliched Western thing. You know, he's walking through the town, and one of the first things you see is these guys building caskets.
Yeah.
And then he sees all the deer horns and stuff on the wall.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the end of that, and there's human skulls. It's like, who has a thing of human skulls sitting there?
The town of Machine.
The town of Machine, apparently. I guess it's literally Welcome to the Machine.
You know, when I really thought that they're trying to convince me
that's a Pink Floyd reference, by the way.
Is it? Yeah, it is. When they're trying to convince me that he was dead, where there were times when nobody, the Indian, would look at him and just grin, and he'd say, what are you looking at? And they'd show his perception. And Johnny Depp's a skeleton.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind he was always dead. This was all taking place in his head. But well, again, it's just my perception.
Tripping, though. He'd also ingested a peyote.
Oh, yeah.
Peyote will do that to you. Peyote. You know, but that was all. Go ahead. You go.
No, he had the skull transposed over his face at one point, and then he got painted to, I don't know what the Z was. I'm assuming he was painting the cheekbones of a skeleton.
Now, the thing I thought with the face paint, I was like, okay, well, he painted two Z's. What do you see when you see a bunch of Z's strung together?
Somebody's
sleeping.
ZZ Top.
It's somebody sleeping, literally. It's like you put that over a balloon in somebody's face. They're sleeping. So you put two Z's in.
I have to assume also at the end that nobody was not dead. He was alive the whole time guiding the spirit. You know, Native Americans are very close to the spirit. Part of the culture is being tied in with the spirit. And that's what this thing is built on. I think Johnny Depp was a spirit. Nobody was alive because obviously at the end he's not anymore, right? How it ends.
You believe all that mumbo jumbo.
Well, whatever, you know.
All that Indian
for the movie is what I'm talking about. For the movie, Max.
No, that actually takes me to one of my favorite scenes, which is the guy sitting by the fire eating the hand, which has stayed with me forever.
Yeah.
That's probably the scene that I thought was the coolest. And it's the coolest and the weirdest for me because if I'm going to eat somebody, why am I going after the hand? And I'm trying to answer this. Well, it'd be the quickest to cook. You know, and then I'm thinking,
food.
And then you go back to what the Indians thought, where they like, you know, with the hearts, they take the power. So that was the guy's right hand, his gun hand. I assume is he trying to get the power from this gunslinger here, this killer? I thought it was his right hand.
Can I tell you guys something
like this?
If we ever get trapped somewhere and you need to use my body for food, you can use my body for food.
I'm going to eat your hand.
Not only did he cook his hand, he fried it because it had crust.
Right? I like the scene right before it because you never really show him shooting the guy.
It looked very crispy.
You just heard the shot.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
I don't know. That scene's just it was so unexpected for me. They're like, oh, this guy eats people. And you'd see that, and you're like, oh, he's probably going to eat somebody.
The thing with
But a hand? That's like the most recognizable part of my body, if you want to.
Well, maybe that's why they used it.
I know, but I mean, and it would cook very quickly.
Well, that was another thing when the second bounty hunter, the one that wouldn't shut up, was telling me.
Yeah, I love that part. Wincott.
He was telling the young black guys, and he did this to his parents, and then he ate them. You're thinking, okay, this is some sort of urban legend.
Yeah,
he's using this to scare the young guy to go in to kill him because he wanted him to go shoot him.
Yeah.
He'd be a legend, you know?
Right.
And then you find out, whoa, he actually does eat people.
I know. You turn around and there it is.
Yeah, and he did it. I wanted to bring this up as far as the religious symbolism, which is, it's all over this thing.
Yeah.
But when they go into the little store to get ammo and
store.
Yeah, ask for tobacco and he says, I'm not selling any of any.
And Alfred Molina's in there.
Yeah, Alfred Molina plays the guy.
Got a blanket.
Yeah, and he asks if I can have your autograph and he sticks his hand down and he stabs him right in the back of the hand. It's like, okay, there's another one. The stigmata.
Never got that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just goes on and on. This is really not a one off film. I think it takes a couple good viewings. It does, man. For me, it's like, I kind of want to see it again. I wonder if it's going to go up for me on the third viewing. It sure did on the second.
Yeah, but
because of all this stuff, I picked up on so much.
But we're talking about these effects. We're talking about the iconic image of the marshal when he falls into the fire. And we're talking about the skull transpositioning and things.
Yeah.
And to me, these special effects were part of the weakest part of this film. It was the transposition of the skull was a very bad special effect.
Well, think about it. I mean, it's an old style movie.
No,
you're looking at
not,
it back from the 50s.
It's
Psycho
not.
Did it.
You can't excuse it with that. It was just a bad special effect.
You're kind of nitpicking it, though.
I am nitpicking. I love this film, and I'm nitpicking it. And it's that was a bad special effect.
Yeah.
And then the practical effect of the Marshall head
That's squash. That's the worst part. It's
just a bad special effect. It's like
you didn't like
the head being squished was one of the worst effects in the whole movie. It just looked bad.
All right.
They could have cut that out.
The effects. I thought you meant the whole thing.
No, the effects. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about special effects. You know, special effects. You know, that's a practical effect. And because it's still
a special effect.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's not a technical special effect like the transposition of the skull was.
Well, I think I think the quote unquote special effects that they use, whether it's in camera or in transposition or practical effect, I think that was done purposely because when he first gets into machine, and I noticed this right when I was watching it. I was like, whoa, that is some of the worst smoke effect coming out.
Yeah, I did. This time it looked like a matte
painting with somebody had run a little blue screen up there in the corner of some blue, some smoke coming out.
Yeah. I did see that this time. Yeah, it's like, oh, that's terrible.
And then I noticed the rest of it. I was like, okay, I think they did this on purpose.
I felt like it was on purpose.
Give it sort of that feel.
It almost looked like it was what they wanted. They could have done something more, but that's what they wanted.
I mean, the budget was a mere $9 million on this movie, but you can afford to make it look.
I'm gonna end my take on this with just the effect thing, and then I'll let you guys kind of get the last word on this. But when you talk about special effects, I thought that the filmmaking effects, the practical effects, those are the best effects. And it goes back to that fade in, fade out thing.
Yeah.
The effect of this being scenes that were so cut, done, onto the next one was a great effect. It's like, okay, there's one. Give me another one. It was almost literally like I felt like a page was turning and they were telling me a story. Okay, and on this page, our characters are here now. And they played that to an effect really well for me. It wasn't like a movie. It was really like just postcards, chapters, one after the other. I like that.
I think on the fade in, fade out, I think that was done purposely to give it sort of a dreamlike translate quality. Yeah. That's all I want to say.
And chapter.
Did that work for you too? Kind of just the overall craftsmanship of it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Anything else?
No, I was just going to say that's very Jim Jarmuschian.
It very Jim Jarmuschian? No,
but I do have something else.
Jim Jarmuschian. We coined a phrase, Jim Jarmuschian. Yeah.
For the American West, you see very little, and I can't remember a film where I've seen the demonstration of the Pacific Northwest Indian. You see a lot of the Southwest Indian, you know, the Apache, the Arapaho, the Comanche, but you don't see movies with the Pacific Northwest. And that's where we get these very stereotypical Indian things like totem poles. Totem poles did not exist except for the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, well, this took place in the Southwest.
No, it did not. It that's where...
Well, this was filmed in Phoenix. I mean, Arizona.
That's not where he goes.
But he might go somewhere else. Yeah, because the high country of Arizona, sure.
He goes to the Pacific Northwest, up into Oregon, into...
Is that what they said in the film? He went to Oregon? The
West? Yeah, okay. He's on the ocean.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, you might be. I'm sorry. It was filmed in Arizona. I know that.
No, I mean, I think machine. That was
just for the dry, dusty look.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you.
Machine.
Okay,
yeah. Is that. But,
yeah. And, you know, I think you have a good point there. Yeah.
Because them engines was born.
This was actually notable as one of the rather few films of Native Americans to be directed by a non-Native and offer nuance and considerate details to individual difference between the Native American tribes.
That's almost a sentence.
Free of common stereotypes. I'm reading this from Wikipedia.
No, it's true. It's true.
You're reading that? No way.
Yeah. it's regarded extremely well researched.
You know what, Savage? Good point. That is an excellent point. It did not feel like a Southwestern Native American film.
No.
That's why I was kind of making sure I was on the same path as you guys. I saw it was filmed mostly in Arizona, but I think that was for that dusty feel coming in, and then they went to the high country because you're seeing big trees and things.
And then the sea canoes. This is an engineering that these people had at that level where you could build something that could get past the waves, the crashing, and if that's their funeral dirge, or, you know, it's yeah.
What do you think about
one of them get in and go?
Did the ending leave you saying okay or come on? I mean, how did the ending fit into the whole story here? That's like a big part, the exclamation point of this thing.
It rounded the whole thing out. I mean, it started just like it began. He was on the train going on his journey, and he would fade in and out of consciousness and see the scenery change. Same thing. And then Crispin Glover comes in and says, remember when you're on the boat, you see the scenery change, but you're standing still. Mm-hmm. It ends. He's on a boat, fading in and out of consciousness. Yeah. He's on a travel. He's on a journey. He sees the stuff moving.
Yeah.
And then he sees nobody and Lance Henriksen getting the final shootout, which was awesome the way they fell down together. You know, the whole thing went in a circle sort of like that. I like the way it ended.
Yeah, I did too. I like movies that end kind of where they begin. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes that roundabout. I like that about this film.
And real quick, that was reflected throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
You talk about that, and you talk about the thing where he says, you'll soon learn to, this will be your poetry, this will be your language.
Right.
He constantly complained he couldn't see without his glasses, and then the guy, nobody takes the peyote. takes his glasses, all of a sudden he can see hitting people with one shot. Boom. They're down.
Yeah.
And long ranges, too. With a gun he had never used.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everything had this little yin and yang to it where it all kind of worked back together.
Remember in the beginning when he took a shot at Gabriel Byrne, the one he's wanted for murder for?
Yeah.
He had to shoot it like four times. He finally pegged him.
Yeah.
And at the end, he's a different beast.
Oh, one thing I wanted to bring up, which I thought was great in this movie, because he had brought up that he'd never really used a gun before. Didn't really know much about him. And I remember he shot Gabriel Byrne. He shot at him three times before he killed him.
Yeah.
I said, okay, that's three bullets gone. And they kept that up. They never showed him reload. And I kept counting the shots. And I said, okay, next time he shoots the gun, he's going to be out of bullets. Sure enough, he was when he went to shoot nobody, when he having sex with that woman in the woods.
That's right.
That was funny.
He went to shoot the guy and boom, click, click. He didn't have any bullets. I said, okay.
Yeah.
He had six bullets. And they never showed him reload. And sure enough, he was out.
Good IMAX. Nice point. And we're talking about the 1995 film Dead Man, by the way, if I haven't told you that in a little while. The ending, Adam, what you think about that?
It was okay of an ending. Just kind of fell for me.
Yeah, I mean, actually, no, the first time I watched it, it did for me, too, because I didn't pay attention enough the first time. I didn't like the ending the first time. Second time, I got it.
And I thought when Lance Hendrickson and Nobody shot each other, that was just – they just throw their arms up in the air like, in a bed.
Yeah,
fall down.
I know that was funny. Yeah.
I think I just found my new ringtone. Honest to God, we are taking that off, and that is going to be my ringtone, my alarm clock, and the soundtrack to my life. But okay. I tell you, guys, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up. That was 1995 Dead Man, and this did inspire our top three movie fugitives. Hey, but before we do that, we're all sticking with our eight twists of tobacco for me. I'm staying there. What about you,
Sarah? Eight is enough.
I'm sticking with eight.
Adam?
Seven.
Oh, he's bumping up.
He went up.
I like this. Yeah, the conversation.
Is that
Adam's first bump up?
In a regular show? Yeah, I think so.
This is one where the conversation can pull you back into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gives it a 39.
A 39 twists of tobacco. So there it is. It's streaming on Netflix. That's Dead Man 1995. I think we recommend it.
Yeah. I say we do. By all means.
Okay, guys, let's talk about this then. Get into this one. This is our top three, inspired by the film, top three movie fugitives.
Fugitives.
Fugitives or wanted.
Let's just say wanted / fugitives.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I'm thinking of Phoebe Cates.
I think he's going off in a different direction. Right. You have to want her because you want to turn her in or kill her.
Not most desirable.
Yeah, not most desirable. Yes, let's get into that. I'll go first. I'll get it out of the way. I think my number three. You know what my number three is?
What's your number three?
I'm going with John Rambo.
Oh, that's
what—that's
a good one.
That's crap that's your number three.
Why is that your number three?
That might be a little higher for me.
Okay, oh, sorry. I mean, this dude, man, he epitomized Man on the Run, right?
Yep. Talking First Blood here.
First Blood.
Yeah, I'm talking about First Blood. Okay, so there's mine. So
the superior film of all of them,
right?
Right.
Let's go over to James R. Savage. What's your number three top movie fugitive?
I'm going to go with Neo.
Good choice.
From The Matrix.
Wow, man.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, the whole Matrix superstructure wanted him.
Mr. Anderson.
Yeah.
We're all fugitives. Well,
Also a movie with a lot of religious overtones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Matrix. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a
movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you hear that? Yeah.
One day on Netflix.
Mo definitely, Bob. Okay, yeah.
But only the first one. We will not discuss the second and third ones.
Max Gumbo Johnson. Give it. Give it, man. Number three.
Number three, I am going to have to go with Frank Abagnale from Catch Me If You Can.
Good one.
Yeah.
So good, I have to do some homework now.
You guys is twos and ones had better be really good, because you're getting some good stuff here.
You've never seen that?
No. What I'm saying is I have to change my list.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he was a fugitive through
the whole movie.
And he was
good
at it.
Catch me if you can.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just a side note here. These are the top fugitives, wanted men, not counting the fugitive.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, we left it off the list because, of course. Because,
Dr.
of course,
Richard Kimball.
It would be number one on everybody's list because it's the fugitive.
The Fugitive Part 2, U.S. Marshals.
Not so much.
I'll tell you what we do want. We do want Mansate Hoodie to give us his number three top movie fugitive.
With young Patrick Swayze as Bodie. And Point Break.
Oh, good choice. Why didn't I think about that?
All right.
Yeah.
Getting some different stuff
picking up
here.
The Keanu Reeves theme.
There you go.
There we go.
Whoa. I didn't even think of that.
Johnny Utah.
Yeah. Wow. We got a fan in the audience.
Being remade as well.
Kathleen Bigelow made that film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She did.
So what's your number three, Mike?
I don't know. I just why so much for internal dialogue. Just, I was like, she made that film back before she was actually making good films.
She made Near Dark.
Hey, don't be knocking Point Break.
Yeah, Point Break's God, awesome. That movie was terrible. No, it's not. It's awesome.
But then again, anything with Gary Busey.
Well, there's a lot of religious
number
undertones.
Number three,
to that.
Maestro. What you got?
No, we're gonna go over to Adam first. Number three. Number three, Adam. What is it?
Can I go Leslie Nielsen wrongfully accused?
Nice.
Basically, okay. The Fugitive, only better.
Yeah.
Only better.
Well, it's got Leslie Nielsen, so right. That's a step up.
Anytime you end with Leslie Nielsen, that's a good way to go. Okay, my number two, top movie Fugitive. I'm going to go with William Money from Unforgiven. Mm-hmm. I can put him on any list you want William Money.
Was he the wanted man in that or the guy who
was you kidding me? They sent a posse out at the end to find him, for crying out loud.
Yeah, but only because Little Bill was crazy.
No. He killed... What are you talking about? He
had already found his life.
He killed the cowboys down at the Big T, or what are they called?
William Money, number two. Yeah,
was his brother Eddie killed in the same... At the end there?
Yeah, his brother Eddie. Yeah.
His career was.
But right. Savage, what's your number two top movie?
Well, for my number two, I have a twofer. I'm going with C-3PO and R2-D2.
or anybody, really, from the Star Wars universe was wanted by somebody.
But no, they were... I mean, these not the droids you're looking for, so they were looking for them droids.
That's a good answer.
That is a good answer.
Non-human fugitive. Who thought of it? I would have thought we would have went there. Non-human fugitive.
Also a lot of religious undertones.
Yeah, tons of them. Right. There actually were a lot of religious
I'm not joking.
In Star Wars, yeah, they were.
Max to the Max, Gumbo Johnson. Give me your number two. What is it?
My number two is also a twofer, because these fugitives seem to like to run together. Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
The epitome.
There you go.
They were wanted. Everybody wanted
because they were real life criminals.
They were,
and the Louisiana folk got them.
Matt St. Hoodie, patron saint of quality outerwear.
Right,
number two, go.
I guess technically this is a twofer. No Country for Old Men. You got Llewellyn and Anton. Everybody's chasing everybody.
That's right.
Yeah. And there's a cop involved, so that's a fugitive somewhere.
That's true.
There's a cop involved.
We just missed him.
The greatest producer in the history of the Q Film Cast, number two. What is it?
Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
I remember seeing the film, but what were they wanted by the law? I get
the Firefly family.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all I remember is. Listen, I remember.
They were mass murderers.
I remember the girl from Three's Company and the stupid clown. That's what I remember from that film.
Yeah.
And it being pretty funny.
Free fried chicken.
Actually, that was a pretty funny film. All right. We back to number ones, right? We landed on number one here.
That's on you, bro.
Can I go? Can I unload it?
Unload it.
There is no better fugitive in terms of just great character. We're talking about Jean Valjean. From Les Miserables.
Wow.
Les Miserables?
From Les Miserables, Jean Valjean. And I say that tongue-in-cheek, Les Miserables.
That's awesome.
Les Miserables.
That's awesome.
That's a quality fugitive.
No, that is a quality, absolutely.
Hoodie, let's go to you first.
Oh.
One.
You have to go with the Batman. You got to go with the Batman and the Batman Rises. Yeah.
Nice.
Really?
Okay.
Is that what you got to go with?
Yeah, you got to go.
In which movie?
In Rises, in the end of Dark Knight.
is that your nerd voice?
I was going to say, did we see just channel Toby from American Splendor?
Right. I don't know where that came from. You kind of hit me at a dark place. It came
out. Darkman,
that's
right?
How I actually talk, and this is Radio Matt.
This is your affect.
Sadly, it's so true. All right, Max, you big nerd.
You big nerd.
What's your number one?
Well, it was going to be something else, but I changed it because James picked it, so... I changed my number one.
Sucker.
But I actually had a question mark after two of them. It was going to be that one. But I'm going with the Blues Brothers.
Yes.
From the Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Honorable mention for me.
They're on a mission from Ged.
From Ged. More religious overtones.
How much for your women?
How much for your wife?
I forgot Savage, man. Yeah. I forgot to ask you for your number. What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
You are the star of this show. I feel so shamed.
I mean, it's Hamlet. So.
No.
What is it?
It's really not. He wasn't one. Clearly Roy Batty from Blade Runner.
I was thinking Roy Batty.
Yeah. That was brought up actually somewhere else I was looking. Yeah. How about the greatest producer? Does he have a number one for us?
Uncle Frank, Hellraiser.
I figured it'd be something like that.
Really?
I thought it was going to be a Muppet.
I did
no,
too.
That comes
or
up. If we would have done it next month, then we would have got.
What was Uncle Frank in that? I don't.
Hellraiser.
Was he
was
wanted
the
by the law?
From hell. He was wanted by the Cenobites.
Oh, okay. Oh, well.
We got honorable mentions.
Let's go to honorable mentions. You have a few, Hoodie?
Well, sure.
Go.
I mean, Jason Bourne. You got Young Guns. You have to mention them. Thelma and Louise.
Yep. Young Guns. Good choice, man.
The Professional. You remember him? Leon?
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Greatest movie ever.
I don't think he was actually wanted.
He was being chased by Gary Oldman. You don't want Gary
Oldman.
Yeah. You don't want him. You don't want Gary Oldman.
I think his brother's weird.
Either.
Gary and Jerry. Yeah.
It's
that stuff.
Creepy couple.
What about you, Hoodie? I mean, Max. Sorry.
Oh, God.
Jack Walsh and Jonathan Mardukas from Midnight Run.
Yeah.
Oh, and, yeah.
Good choice.
And Cyrus the Virus from Con Air.
Nice.
Yeah. They were all fugitives in Con Air, but he was the best.
Yeah. He was the lead fugitive, yeah. You want to know my threefer was that I should have went with? The three from Old Brother Where Art, though.
I thought, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Adam actually said that earlier.
But he didn't.
He didn't. You're right.
How about King Arthur
a lot
and
of, religious
Knights of the Round overtime. Table from the Holy Grail?
He okay. wasn't a fugitive?
I don't know
Monty
about
Python
that.
That was, no, Grail? No. Listen to Adam with this one. This is a good one.
The cops were chasing the entire movie. Remember what? After they hit the woman?
Yeah. It would always cut, it would cut to the cops doing like, police detective work trying to find these guys until they've actually got to them in the last scene of the movie and stop production. So yeah, the whole cast was a fugitive through the whole filming of Holy Grail. Adam, I can't believe that. No, it wasn't
how is that one. Not your number one?
How is that not your number one?
All right. Put this out on Twitter like I always do. Let's rip through this real quick. You know what we got off there? At Matthew Jones 56 says, no disassemble Johnny 5, the ultimate non-human fugitive.
There you go.
How's that for sticking the landing?
It was the ultimate until we got C-3PO over here.
Non-human fugitives. We could almost have done that.
No,
our friends over at the JT Movie Podcast.
Yeah, JT,
a little sister station there.
Yeah, sure.
They do a great job. We're talking about Ben Taylorson at Ben Taylorson from the JT Movie Podcast.
What does Ben say?
Old at Ben Taylorson says, Sean Connery as John Mason in The Rock.
The Rock.
The Rock, yeah.
You didn't bring that up.
No, I didn't bring it up.
You wanted to. I could tell you wanted to. Jealous now. How about Nina Harf at Nanx H says, I have no idea. Leopold Dilg? One of the few Cary Grant movies I really like. Gene Arthur chose the wrong guy. Make any sense?
The Man Who Knew Too Much?
I guess. I don't know.
Hey,
she played along. That's a great answer. That's all I'm saying. Nina Harf. I love that answer.
We chose it.
We went with it. There has to be a handful of people out there say absolutely.
Leopold Dilg.
Golf clap there. Look who stepped in here. I hadn't heard from this guy in a while. At Curious Frankly.
Oh, no. Frank.
Come on, Frank.
What does Frank have to say?
Probably, he's my friend.
Frank is your friend this
probably
week,
something
okay?
Like, Abadou Abali from the great South African film Jean Gauvlie.
Yeah, he did.
That's it? Right? I got it right. Thank you.
There's no better way to round out an episode than from Frank. And at Curious Frankly, our buddy Frank says, maybe not a classic fugitive, but Bob Hughes in Drugstore Cowboy. The ABCs of dealing with an old stiff. OD'd stiff.
An OD'd stiff.
You like that answer?
I thought that was Weekend at Bernie's?
An old dead stiff.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you, Frank. Yeah, gotta love Frank. That was our breakdown of the film 1995's Dead Man, written and directed by Jim Jarmusch.
Billy Bob Thornton stole the movie.
Actually, he did. Thinking back, he stole the movie.
He kind of did.
That's early Thornton, too.
How you get your hair like that?
That's before anybody knew his name.
Yeah, Max, how you get your hair like that? Mine just feels like straw hay.
It's like old barn hay. I can't do nothing with it.
And believe me, I've run my fingers through before. No, I haven't.
Well, then shoot me, damn it.
Well, do it. Oh, hellfire. It burns like hellfire. Yeah, let's stop that. Okay, so then let's get on to the next one, man. That's the big reveal for next week. And we're going to do something a little special once again. We're going to reach out beyond the circle. I'm calling on my buddy John Cowden.
Say what? Say what?
What you talking about? Now, that's what Willis was talking about. No. He's a friend of the show, friend of mine. And he says, hey, man, I have something I want you to watch. Cue it up. I said, all right, yeah, you choose the film. You know what he comes back with? He says 13 Assassins. And I think Adam has permagrin.
Takashi Miike.
This is one I actually want to see because I hear it's a good film. Have you seen this, Max?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. Have you?
Nope.
Okay, have you?
I have.
Okay. It's Hoodie and I. We've not seen this film.
All right.
Have you hadn't seen it?
I have purposely not watched this because I knew we were talking about this one.
You have purposely not watched it because you knew it would instinctively be taken off of Instant, so you will wait until it does, so you can say, I wanted to watch that so bad.
I would have bought it at that point.
I made fun of Adam. I'm sorry.
The power of editing.
See, I think it's the only Mickey film I do not own.
Wow, first name basis.
last name.
No, the last name is the first name.
Yeah, in Japanese Japan, culture. That's right. Okay. All right, guys, so that's next week. We're going to queue up the film. Queue it up and knock it down. Remember that old that old tagline?
Bring that back.
Let's bring it back tonight. I'm bringing the tag.
Everybody be quiet.
Knock it down.
All right, say it now.
We're going to queue it up and knock it down.
Boom.
13 Assassins.
13 Assassins, that's next week. Thanks for stopping on here at the queue once again. We'll see you next week. That's it. Night-night. Yeah. I'm sorry. What are you doing?
He is breathing life into a moth.
And dead failing.
Moth. Dead moth.
That Matt killed and threw at me.
What is that?
It's a moth.
Oh.
What?
I didn't disrupt the show.
No. I didn't either.
You're giving CPR to a moth. That's the disruption. That's
a- well, you no, that's killed cool. it, man.
This I'm moth. I didn't get to see this. I'm sitting behind a monitor.
Go, go.
No, no, I don't remember where I was. It's funny because there's certain things. I don't know what, just little, certain things. He's like, nope. And certain things
well,
for some reason.
CPR on moths, I can see. <There's> I can see where that catches your eye.
Well, almost done with that.
You're going on to your special shout out.
Oh, man, fuck. I'm trying to save lives here. And you're
high five.
Oh! Yay!